episode, we're going to have a special episode here, not one of our regular every other week numbered episodes, but this is getting back into the play sessions. Back a couple months ago, we were doing play sessions on a pretty regular basis, and just through normal day-to-day type stuff, you know, that's kind of fallen back. But we've all gotten back together and decided to get back into it. And to kind of kick things off, we want to do another round of character creation. If you go back into our archives, we've got Jesse who did a set of character creation back there. But we wanted to take another stab at it just with the Reckless Dice crew here. So today we've got Jesse with us.
Hey, guys.
And Lester.
Hello.
And, of course, I'm Paul. I don't know if I introduced myself. So really, we're just going to kind of jump into it right here and start out with character creation from scratch.
And I think the idea is with this segment is we're going to go through character creation, not just filling out your character sheet, but also building up some of the backstory, helping prepare characters for novice players or experienced players alike so that you are ready to play with a full-fledged character, not just the mechanics aspect of it.
Sounds good.
Yeah, totally. And you need no introduction, Paul, by the way.
Oh, thanks, Lester. I appreciate that. All right, so shall we get started, Jesse? I think, well, the first thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to, step number one with creating a character for Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition, is selecting your race. So, Jesse, I think you're going to...
I think I'm going to... So we have a couple options here. We can either randomly generate it, or you can choose. And I think that we've each chosen a little bit of a different way to approach that random element. But I know some of you guys want to randomly generate your race. I think I'm going to be a dwarf because I'm pretty jazzed about the new content coming. So I'm just going to go ahead and pick dwarf. You guys can do what you'd like.
Okay. So Jesse chooses dwarf. Lester, are you going to do a random race or are you going to choose a race?
I am definitely going to roll the dice to see what happens.
Okay, so the way that you do random race determination in the rules as written is you roll 4 white dice, and if you get no successes, then you're a human. If you get 1 success, you get to choose between a human or a dwarf. 2 successes, you're a dwarf. 3 or 4 successes, you're an elf.
All right. So I'm going to roll the dice here.
So it's interesting. They kind of play that in to be to kind of limit the number of certain types of creatures that or races that exist in the Empire. It sounds makes elves far less common.
Well, and that really does fall into things. I mean, in the Empire, specifically the Reichland, you're not going to run into a lot of elves.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe
true.
Even wood elves a little bit more than high elves, just because the Athel Loren is right across the Gray Mountains. But really, dwarves are kind of integrated into the Empire's society. Elves are very rare, though.
Yeah, sure. Well, I rolled a success and 2 boons, so I'm assuming that means I should be a dwarf. I think it's fitting considering I'm 7 feet tall. So I'm going to also be a dwarf.
Okay. So maybe we're looking at should be playing this after Blackfyre Pass comes out. But yeah, at the rate that we're going, we'll probably actually get to our play session. Yeah, there you go. That would be fun. All right. Well, I'm going to roll randomly as well. So I've got my 4 white dice here. And I have rolled 1 success as well. You know what? I think I'm going to go for the most wide variety of things. If you pick humans if you pick dwarves or elves, you get a lot of special abilities, and your starting abilities start out higher. But if you pick human, you really have kind of the most variety that you can do. The most careers are open to you, all of those sorts of things. So I'm going to go with human. I'll be the token human in the party.
Yeah, they're very adaptable.
Yep. All right. So as dwarves, you guys get your special abilities. So
The first one is the Children of Grugni. Before investing any creation points, an Asgaraz dwarf may train one of the following skills for free: discipline, resilience, or weapon skill. Well, I think for the first time ever, I'm going to try a combat-oriented character. So I think I'm going to go with weapon skill.
Okay. Lester, how about...
Do we get to choose that for free, or do we have
to... Yeah, you get to pick one of those 3 for free before anything else kind of gets rolling.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to pick discipline so my character doesn't go as insane as fast.
As previous episodes.
Now, the important thing is that, you know, depending on... You guys can pick this later. You don't have to pick it right now. Because your career can also tell you, you know, which skills you could invest creation points in. Right? So you can't buy a skill unless it's part of your starting career. So if you choose a career, if you have a career selected that has weapon skill or discipline but doesn't have resilience, then maybe you want to take that free resilience because that's something that isn't available to you and you spend two of your creation
points to get the other ones. Here, does you do this before you invest any skills? So good call. It doesn't have to happen now.
It doesn't have to happen now, yeah.
The second skill that we get as dwarves is called Grudge. A character ability.
Second ability.
Is that what I say?
Yeah, it's the special abilities part.
Yes. The Karak Asgaraz dwarf gains a white die to all melee attacks and ranged attacks against any greenskins, which would be snotlings, goblins, orcs, black orcs, and I think trolls fall in that category too, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
And you also get that grudge ability against anybody who has wounded you for the duration of the encounter you're in. So let's see, that goes under special abilities here.
Yep. Now I like this next ability because I tend to be a stickler for encumbrance because I don't like the unrealistic, you know, I carry 5 million items on my person at one time. Mm-hmm. So the sturdy ability allows a dwarf to add 5 to his overall encumbrance limit.
So that's going to actually be determined once our strength is determined, so we'll have to hold off. We get +5 to it.
Yep.
Once it happens for being dwarves. We also get night vision. We can reduce, we take 2 fewer misfortune dice for any darkness vision impairments. Night vision. And then our wound threshold is 10 plus our toughness, and our corruption threshold is 10 plus our toughness. Cool. So that's I think that squares us for the moment. Paul, do you want to do your?
Yeah. So the Reichlander, the humans, right? So they've kind of broken it down. Actually, they say dwarves are Asgaraz dwarf characters, and then humans are Reichlander characters, which is kind of interesting that they would make that distinction. That there'd possibly be at some point in the future, you know, you'd pick a Bretonian human character
or something.
Yeah, some other Karak for a dwarf, which is cool. But anyway,
I can see that.
So the humans, the special abilities for the humans is that you're adaptable, which means career transitions cost 1 less advance, which can reduce a career transition to 0 advances. Diversity, so you guys as dwarves and elves as well only get 20 character creation points. I get 25, but I also don't get extra skills or abilities, as we'll show later on. Also favored by fate. Once per session, the Reichlander may add 2 fortune dice to any single check. And then my wound threshold is 9 plus my toughness, and my corruption is 5 plus my toughness. So I think that does it for step 1. Now we're at step 2, which is random careers. And I know we've talked about this in episodes before, but I really, really encourage folks, even starting out folks, to use the random careers. Because people, it kind of goes into the diversity of Warhammer and the uniqueness of Warhammer. If you allow people to select their careers, they're going to choose the things that they think is going to fit, and you're going to get a lot of stuff like pit fighters and bounty hunters and you know, initiates and wizards. That might be the one thing that I think, you know, if somebody really wants to play a magic user, either a wizard or a priest, I might let them choose that as a career, because the chances of you getting, we counted it earlier, there's 45, not counting the dwarf careers that came with the Journey to Blackfyre Pass, but if you count all of the supplements that have been out so far, there's 45 basic careers. And so the chances of you getting a magic user career is, well, A, you have to be a human, and B, you basically have a 2 in 45 chance, so... pretty rare.
Well, who wants to go first?
Doesn't matter to me.
I'll go first.
All right.
All right, so you're going to draw me three cards, is that right? And then, yep. Assuming they're all dwarf compatible, I will choose right. from those three. So if one of them's not dwarf compatible, you choose a replacement card, is that right?
That's correct. So I've got all 45 cards here appropriately shuffled. My eyes are closed. I know you can't tell because this is radio, but I am randomly selecting three cards out.
I trust you to be gentle.
First one, second one, and the third one. Okay, so what we've got here is we've got first up is Mercenary. Mercenary is allowed basic career for humans, dwarves, high elves, or wood elves, so that's okay. a legitimate one. The second one is Commoner, which is human only, so we need to redraw that. Draw out a new one.
They don't allow for dwarf commoner.
Agitator, human or dwarf, so that's good. And then the third one I drew is Road Warden, which is a human career, so we do another draw. Random selection. And we come up with Messenger. Dwarf, elf, wood elf, or human. So your three
messenger,
options
huh?
are Agitator.
Messenger is sounding interesting.
Mercenary and Messenger.
Messenger. Let me look that one up here. Yeah, you know, I'll go with Messenger.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, I'll stick with Messenger. I'm going to start transferring some of that information onto my character sheet here while you guys work on your next one.
Okay. Lester, we'll do yours now.
Word up.
Okay, and you're a dwarf as well?
I am definitely going to be a dwarf.
So the first one I picked was Apothecary, which is for any race.
Ooh.
More random shuffling here. And the next career I pick is Navigator. Again, any race. And that's actually one of those that came out of the Winds of Magic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not one of the basic careers. And the third one, Forger, human or dwarf?
Ooh, both Navigator and dwarf and Forger sound really awesome. But I think I'm going to go with Navigator.
Okay.
Because then I can work up to becoming an engineer of some type with the dwarfs.
Very good. All right. Now the last one, choosing for myself. All right. First one is Waywatcher. That's Wood Elf. That doesn't count. Draw again. Performer. Available any race. Second one is picked out Apothecary again, just to show you how random we actually are here, which is any race, so that's relevant for humans. And the last one is War Dancer. Nope. Somebody wants me to be a wood elf.
Yeah, it's telling you.
Yep. All right.
Next you're going to get Envoy.
Troll Slayer.
Anything but.
Yep. Thief. There we go. So my three choices are Apothecary, Performer, and Thief.
Interesting.
So we've got a Navigator and a Messenger, so I think I might go for Thief, actually. That sounds like it could be fun. Not, you know, more stealthy, not quite combat class. I think we're going for a lot of kind of agile folks here.
Okay, so the next, now that we've all got our careers, we can enter that into our current career section of our character sheet. And we also have the race, so that can be entered along yep. with our special abilities. Now that we have the career card, we can enter our default stance meter. So for me, it's going to be three conservative and one reckless. What about you guys?
I'm half and half, personally, two yep. and two.
Okay. And then, so I think the next thing we're going to do is begin spending our creation points.
Correct. So investing the creation points. So since you guys are both dwarves, you get 20 creation points, and I get a 25 as a human. Now, the starting characteristics for dwarves is a 3 in strength and toughness, and then a 2 for everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a human, it's 2 in everything.
Yep. All right, and we the other thing to note then is that we each get a 1-point bump before we spend our characteristic points in one of our primary characteristics on our character cards.
Actually, it's both.
You get one in each.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Fancy pantsy. All right. Well, agility and fellowship, here I come.
It says the initial value for a characteristic is the race's default value plus a 1-point bonus to the primary characteristics.
Mm-hmm. That keeps getting better and better each time we read it.
Mm-hmm. So as a messenger, then, Jesse?
Yeah, I got fellowship and agility bumped up to 3.
Yep. And then for...
I got 4 toughness and 3 intelligence.
Right. And then so I get 2s and everything except for my agility becomes 3 and my fellowship becomes 3.
And now my guy's going to eat rocks.
It's important to note during the character creation process that none of your characteristics are allowed to exceed 5.
Right.
Even though like Lester has is starting out before spending any of his character creation points with a 4 toughness, he could, in theory, bump it up to 5 if he likes, but he cannot exceed that for now. I think you can further on as you spend traditional advancement points. So let's go ahead and let's keep in mind that we're going to be bumping not only our characteristics, we're also going to be using our character creation points to invest in our wealth, skills, talents, and beginning action cards. Each of those last 4 categories, you can spend anywhere between 0 and 3 creation points, which determines how powerful or how strong you are in that given category. So you don't spend 0 to 3 creation points for all of them combined. You spend 0 to 3 in each one.
Yeah, so you can spend up to a maximum of 12 creation points outside of increasing your characteristics.
Yes, absolutely. So let's all kind of just talk through our thought process as we do it. I don't think we necessarily need to do each of us individually because that will take quite a while perhaps. But like Lester, what are you kind of thinking for your character?
Well, I want him to be a little bit unhinged, but like I want him to be relatively with it and quite charismatic. So I think I'm going to spend some points on his fellowship because his toughness and strength are already quite high. I kind of want the character to be a little bit unhinged, though, and he's definitely an adventurer. He likes to travel all over the old world.
And to point out, when you're increasing characteristics, you're going to spend a number of characteristic points equal to the number that you want to bring the characteristic to in increments of 1 at a time. So, for example, if your strength is 3 and you want to increase it to 4, you'll spend 4 creation points. If you want to then increase it to 5, you'd spend 5 additional creation points for a total of 9. And you can, again, you can't exceed 5, but you can bump them up to whatever's appropriate. Default value for a character tends to be about 3. Not default, but average, I'm sorry. And a power, if you're really trained in something, 4, 5 is like an exceptional skill.
Yeah, it's actually kind of the words that they associated to it in the player's guide is a characteristic of 1 is deficient, 2 is poor, 3 is average, 4 is good, 5 is excellent. It's also worth noting that characteristic points, the creation points or the characteristic increase after character creation is pretty tough.
It is.
You spend the number of advancements. If the characteristic is within your current career, you spend the number of advancements equal to where you're going to go. So if you're trying to move, for example, so the thief has agility and fellowship. If my fellowship is 3, and I want to spend advances after character creation to get it up to 4, then I'm going to need to spend 4 out of my 10 advances to get up to that.
So what I've chosen to do is bring my – I've spent my characteristic points, giving myself 3 in everything except toughness and willpower, which are 4, which left me over with 6 creation points. I'm going to spend 3 of them on skills and then 1 on wealth, 1 on talents, and 1 on action points.
See, now, I've seen you do that before, Jesse, where you spend most of it on skills.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you choose so many skills?
Good question.
Versus, say, like, talents and actions.
So my logic behind it is Wealth, I tend to not spend a whole lot on, just enough to kind of get me started, figuring that I can. I like characters that are hard off at the beginning, because they don't they have to find and accumulate their wealth as they play. So I find that starting wealth, I don't need to spend a whole lot in. Talents, I find that a character card really can only use a couple at a time anyway. So having just a few to start out with is a manageable one, where I kind of get comfortable with the cards that I have at the beginning and learn how to use them, and then slowly add more to it. Skills, I like rolling lots of dice. I like the yellow dice. I like feeling that I'm good innately as a character without the action cards to supplement it. I don't have a whole lot of logic behind it, but that was what I came
up with. So the one thing you may not recognize is that if you complete your career, if you complete your initial career, one of the bonuses that you get with the dedication bonus is that you get a skill specialization of every skill that you learned in the career. Starting skills, if you train the skill at character creation, it's not on your advancement sheet, and you don't get specializations for them.
Hmm. Well, you just get the two that come with spending. Instead of getting four,
absolutely.
You get
yeah.
two. But...
yeah, I guess I start out with the two instead.
All right, so I've decided to spend 17 points into my characteristics. So I increased his agility to 3. I increased his intelligence to 4. I increased his willpower to 3. And I spent 7 in total to increase his fellowship to 4. And then I spent 1 in everything but actions, because I'm like Jesse, where I would prefer to be able to do things without relying on the actions. And I already start with 8 basic actions, so gaining 1 action card that I can like learn my way around at the beginning, it just makes more sense to me, because I can spend my points to gain actions as we advance within the game.
Okay. So for my characteristics, I agree with you guys. I mean, having a 2 in a characteristic can potentially get you in trouble, because if you remember how stress and fatigue works, you are stressed once you start getting the number of stress greater than your lowest mental characteristic. So if you have a dump stat, if you have a 2 fellowship or a 2 intelligence or something like that, 3 stress will put you into a stressed mode. So like you guys, I want to be at least average in all my characteristics. So I spent enough points to bump up everything to 3 across the board, which is 12 points for me. So I had 4 of my characteristics were at 2. And then now I'm going to spend another 8, and I'm going to increase my agility and willpower to 4, which leaves me 5 left over for my character for my other creation point investments, which I haven't quite decided on yet.
Now we should also pull out our career ability cards now that we've determined those. And in addition to that, now that we've generated our characteristics, we can determine our wounds and corruption thresholds as well as our encumbrance limit. So for humans, your wound threshold is 9 plus your toughness. And for the dwarves, it's 10 plus your toughness. So I'm at 14 wound threshold. The corruption limitation or threshold for dwarves is 10 plus your toughness as well. So I have 14 wound and corruption thresholds. For humans, your corruption threshold is 5 plus your toughness.
Okay, so my wound threshold is 12. My corruption threshold is 8.
My wound threshold is 14 and my corruption is 14. Or my corruption threshold, I guess. I'm not quite that corrupt yet. We'll see when the gold starts flowing. We'll see.
So let's also dig out our career cards here and see what kind of special abilities we're going to get for being a messenger, a thief, and a
navigator.
So as a navigator, I may spend a fortune point to get my bearings when lost. I can discern true north or add 2 white dice to any check to navigate in foreign terrain.
And let's see, as a messenger, each time fortune refreshes, I may immediately perform a free maneuver.
Nice.
Okay, and thief, once per session, I can add an expertise die to any guile or skullduggery check.
So let's now move into let's distribute our wealth, skills, talents, and actions. I think wealth is the easiest one to begin with. Who spent zero on wealth?
Well, I haven't picked my numbers yet.
Oh, you haven't?
I'm still trying to figure it out. So I think, all right, I'm going to spend two on talents because I have two talent slots, and I want to make use of both of them. I like actions. I like actions a lot, so I'm going to spend another two on that so I can get three actions. And then, so it's wealth versus skills. All right, I'm going to be poor.
Which is 1 point. Yeah,
right,
that's what I did
as well.
Which is
1 point. And then, so I have no points left for skills, which means I'm only going to have one skill trained.
Okay. So let's go ahead and distribute that wealth then. So everybody put at least 1 point in. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So everybody who spent 1 point, by investing one creation point, a character starts out poor. A poor character begins play with a set of durable, comfortable clothes and a cloth rucksack. He may choose to start with a dagger, a quarterstaff, a crossbow, or a hand weapon. And in addition to that, they have 50 silver coins. So clothes.
50 whole silver?
Yeah,
I feel
poor.
Rich.
Well, for comfortable, if you spent one more, you get 2 gold.
I know, exactly.
And then affluence, 5 gold.
That's why I'm always so tempted to go comfortable, at least. Because then I can always buy whatever.
I'll do a hand weapon, which will be my warhammer. So a hand weapon is really any one-handed weapon of no particular description. It can be a sword, a hammer, a mace, a club, really whatever you like. So I'm going to get a hammer, given that I'm a dwarf.
I think as a thief, a dagger is appropriate for me.
And okay. I think I'm going to take a light crossbow.
You can't get a light crossbow.
Yeah, a crossbow.
No,
the
crossbow.
Regular, just a regular crossbow.
Oh, it's just a regular one.
Mm-hmm.
That was a typo fix that I think they did a while ago. The light crossbow and the crossbow are the same thing.
So
is it pistol crossbow then? Is that the?
No, that's a different. That's a special.
Right. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Okay, and then the next one here is skills, which means you can put one tick into any of your available career skills from your career card. And since we're beginning characters, we're not allowed to exceed one tick per in our boxes, so we cannot enter that second column.
So when you say tick, you mean train, right? So how many times you've trained the skill?
Correct.
Right. So. If you look at the career skills, each career has 5 career skills. Some of them may be basic skills, and some of them may be advanced. I think for all of us, everything's basic.
It looks like all of mine are.
Yeah.
So I'm going to train charm, folklore, intuition, and stealth.
So the important thing is that if you have an advanced skill as one of your career skills, you spend one advancement to acquire the skill, so then you can actually roll against it, because that's the difference between basic skills and advanced skills. Basic skills, anybody can roll against a basic skill. You can't roll against an advanced skill unless you've acquired the skill. So you spend one of your skill, basically points, to acquire the skill, and then you'd have to spend a second point to get it trained and to have the expertise die.
Mm-hmm. Now, I also have 2 specializations here. I'm going to research those while we kind of progress. Does anybody else have specializations?
No, I didn't get Benny, because I just spent 1 point on skills. So I got to train two skills. So I took discipline for my Children of Grugni ability, and then I trained athletics and observation.
Okay. Well, let's see, like for charm, I could do etiquette, gossip, diplomacy, haggling, seduction. Ooh, haggling sounds like fun. Let's add that one.
So how does that fit into your idea of what your character is, Jesse?
Well, actually, what I tend to do is allow these kind of things to begin forming what my guy's going to be. So all I know so far is I'm a dwarf messenger, which leads me to believe I'm in the Empire, perhaps delivering a message when I'm beginning my adventure. I know I'm tough and have good willpower, so I'm kind of like your stereotypical dwarf in all aspects so far. I know dwarves are pretty stingy with their money, or they like to kind of have a lot and they like to get a good deal, so haggling seems appropriate so far. I can also then look into intuition and folklore. So I'm going to use these specializations as a way to kind of form the basics of my character without having to come up with all of it on my own. Let's see, creature lore, Reichland lore, geography, superstition, and local customs. Creature lore would be fun. I could learn about, I could know some advantages or kind of a little history on all the creatures we encounter potentially.
Yeah, I think that's a great ability to
that
have.
Might be a fun one. I could be a messenger who's seen a lot of things and can maybe help educate the rest of the party.
Yeah, and I can lead the way as the navigator.
And also, here's a good thing for everybody out there, is that we have two dwarves in the party. One's a navigator, one's a messenger. I mean, I'm already seeing a relationship forming here for backstory. Maybe we were sent together, and he was to guide the message along. Maybe it's a very important message. We're naturally forming a backstory for our characters and prior relationships. Okay, well, those are my two specializations. I'm not even going to look at the other ones because I like those two. All right, so we can now – let me get back to the creation page. I've lost it now. We are now on to talents and action cards. Is that right?
Are we going to cover other people's skills?
I think you need to tell us what skills you picked, Paul, but I believe that both Jesse and I have stated our skills.
Yeah, my skill that I'm picking is skullduggery. So since I didn't spend any points on it, I just get the one basic skill trained. Skullduggery is the general thieving type skill. It's to pick locks, pick pockets, all of those sorts of things.
Cool.
Yeah, pry doors open.
Mm-hmm. So let's do some. You don't get any specializations, is that right, Paul?
Right.
Okay.
You only get specializations if you spend two or three creation points.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hop into talents, which are split up between – well, you can only choose the talents that are available to your career. Is that right? Or can you
– No, you can choose whatever you like, but it doesn't make much sense not to do it.
Unless you're going to lock it into your party sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So I have available to me focus and reputation. So I'm going to start fingering through those while you guys talk about yours.
Well, I only have focus, so I'm pretty much, limited there. There's some really good focus talents, though.
Right. So you're looking for things that kind of enhance what you're doing, what you can include, or sometimes you can look for things that can complement places where you're weak. So, for example, with my character, I could very easily pick – I get a reputation and a focus. One of the reputations is shady. The shady reputation gives you your skullduggery checks gain a fortune die. So that means every time that I roll skullduggery, I would get four dice for my agility, four characteristic dice for my agility modified by my stance. I'd get an expertise die since I've got the skill trained, and then I would get an additional fortune die for the shady. But that also limits me to just skullduggery. I'd be very, very good at it, but not perhaps anything else. So unfortunately, I don't have a tactic. Tactics are usually those that are combat-focused. Reputations is kind of social-focused, and then focuses are more
observation or intelligence-focused.
Yeah, mental is kind of – mental, physical, social is kind of the triumvirate that runs through my mind.
That's a good point. So I've chosen Skygazer for my dwarf. which gives me the ability that your intelligence checks gain one white dice so long as you are under the open sky. Which leads me to believe that my dwarf spends a lot of time outside of the holds and out in the open delivering messages around the world.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about my navigator dwarf. He seems to wander a lot.
Well, obviously your dwarf has taught me how to read the sky and understand it throughout our travels.
And appreciate it. That leads me to pick keen eyes as my talent. So I get to add one fortune dice to any observation check I made where vision is relevant.
Now, I tend to like to get skills that help me out in the role-playing elements and the investigation phases more so than combat ones.
Well, I only have focus available to me, so it just makes sense.
I mean, even if I had a tactic available, I think I'd generally pick something that helps me during my the investigation phases of the adventures, because I find that's where most of the action takes place as far as role-playing action, not like combat action. But those are also the parts I enjoy the most. So things that help me out there, I tend to steer towards.
That's why I like to have a fellowship, like a high fellowship score.
And Paul, you don't get a talent, is that right?
No, I get two, actually.
Oh, you do, sorry?
Yeah.
He said he wanted to put one on each of his talent sockets.
Ooh. So,
I'm looking at so my reputation. I'm looking between strong-willed, which is a good all-around card. It's exhaust the card to recover one fatigue and one stress, and then also just going to shady and really boosting my skullduggery and making myself not just a great thief but an excellent thief. So I'm kind of debating between both of those. Over on the focus side. Not too sure what I'm looking at there. Bonuses to guile when using reckless based on intelligence. Intimidation. Recover stress. Intuition. Add to willpower.
Do you have kind of a style that you're thinking of?
I'm thinking. I'm thinking kind of your basic thief, really. You know, definitely urban oriented. Not necessarily, you know, more of a second story type person, not so much the thug aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
A little more suave in things. Let's see.
I like the foul-mouthed reputation.
All right, I think I might pick instinctive, which allows me to add a white die to any intuition check. So that's good for figuring out when people are lying to me. And then I will go with the shady, which allows me to be super skullduggerous. So those will be my two talents.
Sounds good.
Okay, what's next?
So with that, we're going to go into action cards. Lester, do you have some thoughts on yours?
Not really, as of right now. I only get to pick one, so I find this to be quite a difficult choice when I only have one to choose from, because I can't just burn one on one that looks fun.
I'm trying to decide if I want to go hammer and shield, or if I want to do a two-handed weapon for my dwarf. And you can choose some of the new Omens of War weapon specialization styles if you want, right? As a intro action card. So I'm kind of thinking to try some of those, either the Zweihänder, or which is the two-handed expert, or the Bulwark, which is the hand weapon and shield. I'm bouncing back and forth between those two currently. Because if I do Zweihänder, I'll have to purchase a two-handed weapon with my 50 silver. Otherwise, I can do the sword and board, and I'd still have to purchase then a shield of some sort.
I think I want to stick with the dwarven theme here and make my guy slightly bardic and pick the Saga of Valia, which allows me, if I succeed at the check, which is a discipline check, while the card is recharging, all of my active defenses add an additional misfortune dice to the actions dice pool. So if somebody tries to attack me, I can use my active defenses to more of an effect.
I think I've decided on Warding Cut, which is a bulwark sword or a hand weapon and shield one, which allows me to do a little bit of damage, but also allow me to remove recharge tokens from my active defenses as I perform it. Or conversely, I can remove the recharge tokens from my companions as well.
And that's all that you guys had? You just had one action each?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I spent 1 point. I get two. Oh, cool.
Yep. And Lester, you spent none?
I spent 0 points on actions.
Yeah.
Because I got the 8 basic, and I've got that trusty old perform a stunt.
Well, it looks like there's only 3 bulwark skill or action cards anyway, unless I do some more just traditional.
And Lester, which one did you pick? I'm sorry, I missed.
Saga of Valia? Yeah, Saga of Valia. Or Valaya, yeah. Something like that.
So that's an ancestor saga?
That's an ancestor card, action card.
Those are usually associated with the Ironbreaker, right?
I think it's just dwarf. I think the ancestor just has to do with the dwarfs.
I seem to recall it being the Ironbreaker as well, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, and again, this gets into the idea that the action cards are available to everyone. Just because there isn't anything that would prevent me from taking a saga card as well. It may not have the same backstory to it, as a human, but that game and game effect really depends on the game that you're playing. Whether you want to allow those sorts of things.
For fun, because I haven't tried one yet, my second action is going to be testing metal, which is a bulwark card, but it's also one of the new enhancement cards. So I'm going to add that to my library.
Cool. Now, the important thing about actions, too, is that you can only take an action if you can do it, right? So the requirements of the action that are listed. So if there's anything that's particularly there...
Well, it says I have to have a shield equipped.
Yeah, but
during the character creation process, I plan on spending some of my silver to own a shield.
Right.
So will that kind of all fold together and be okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
But what you're saying, though, is that if I could not acquire this shield if I don't... Or this card if I do not own a shield at the beginning of the game...
That's pretty much the way that it's written. I mean, it's the idea is that you have to qualify, because there's some action cards that are out there, like the basic actions that require you to have a strength 3+ or a toughness 3+. So if you don't have...
Ooh, actually, there's a couple things here that I have to qualify for now that you're mentioning it.
Yeah.
Shield equipped, resilience trained.
Yep.
I don't have resilience trained.
Then you can't take that action.
Well, shoot.
Well,
or I could
I'm thinking
train
now that you guys...
drop that weapon skill training I had from earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll do that. I like
yeah,
this
because
thing.
So you've got you're using your dwarf free skill to switch it from weapon trained to resilience, because the messenger doesn't have resilience as a career skill.
Is this where you say, ha, 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 you should have listened to me earlier and not spend it until you...
No, I'm not. Hey, this is all part of character creation. The idea that you pull things together to kind of, you know, the real ability to do cool things is to chain things together. For example, I took my single skill that I trained in is skullduggery. I took the reputation that adds to my skullduggery checks. So the three actions that I've chosen, I've got a combat action, I've got a melee action, and I've got a support action. But the combat action doesn't use weapon skill. It uses skullduggery. It's surprise attack. So when I'm engaged with a target but I'm not visibly armed or the target doesn't suspect me of being an enemy, so it's basically sneak attack. I've got sudden knife, which is my ranged attack. So the target's within close range. If I'm not visibly armed or the target doesn't suspect me of being an enemy, then I just stab a knife, throw a knife into my dagger into his back, and then the devious maneuver is I do some sort of dirty underhanded trick to impair my enemy, such as throwing mud in your eyes or hiding your journal if it's a social action or something like that. So all of these actions that I've taken have chained to my focus, which has been, or my, you know, the one thing that I'm aligning myself towards, which is this skullduggery of being an excellent thief.
Cool. So is everybody square on action cards now?
Well, I kind of want to change that now that you pointed out that the ancestor cards are only related to the Ironbreakers.
But we did also talk in many of our episodes that, you know, kind of per the GM's approval, a lot of those rules can be overwritten if there's a reasonable reason for it taking place. So I think our next game is going to be with Paul. And, I suppose you could, you know, talk it through with him and see if that's something that's worth keeping or not.
Well, and it's a GM's rule to make any traits on an action to be limiting. Right. So the rules is written, traits on an action don't limit the ability for the action. It's really that black bar underneath the picture. That's all that you need to have to be able to use that action or to be able to acquire that action. So
I can definitely justify why he would know that ability.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I'll just keep it.
Yeah, that's fine. I don't have any problems with that.
So then if we're good with action cards, let's move into perhaps spending a little bit of the silver that we have and filling in the statistics for our weapons and armor.
Sure.
So I believe we each chose to be poor, which is 25, which is, I'm sorry, 50 silver that we have available to us to spend. Let's first apply the statistics for the equipment that we each start with. Cloth armor. Is actual that durable cloth clothing you're wearing does provide you some protection. It's the very, very first and topmost armor, and that provides you 0 defense and 1 soak point, and has an encumbrance value of 1.
Okay.
And then my hammer, or otherwise known as a hand weapon, for anybody who chose hand weapons, has a damage value of 5, a critical rating of 3, and no other, 0 range, and no special qualities. Paul, you took a dagger, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So your damage rating is 4, your critical rating is 3, it's a ordinary weapon, it has the special quality fast, and an encumbrance value of 2.
Okay.
Actually, I have 3 for my encumbrance value. Now, the fast means that when you use that weapon, you take 1 less recharge token when performing an action. And Lester, did you choose the crossbow? Is that right?
Yeah, I got a crossbow.
Crossbow. The damage rating is 6. The critical rating is 3. The range is long. It is two-handed. And has the reload characteristic. And its encumbrance value is 4. And I guess it assumes that you do not have any ammunition off. It wasn't part of the. How would you suggest playing that, Paul? It seems like if you have a crossbow, you'd have at least something.
In my games, I usually don't keep track of ammo. To be honest,
it seems like unless there's some reason you wouldn't find it all. I mean, how many times do you really shoot your crossbow in a couple sessions?
Well, I think it'd be something along the lines of if it was story driven, if it was specifically that you were on a long mission or weeks out in the field or things like that. I mean, there's a lot of cool things that you can do with ammo, like rolling fortune dice for every bolt or bow arrow that you shoot, and if it comes up a success, you can
maybe we kind of keep it of the onus of the player to decide if they want to manage their ammunition or not. It shouldn't really be the GM's responsibility anyway. So Lester, do you want to manage your ammunition?
I always manage ammunition and encumbrance because it's part of the game.
Cool. Okay. So, but then the question that I'm bringing up is, should a player start with ammo or not?
Well, I don't think that they should necessarily start with ammo, but are we going to discuss how we're going to prep ourselves for the first adventure, or?
We're applying the statistics to our equipment right now, and then we're also going to do some reasonable shopping.
Well, then I'll spend
2 silver for 12 bolts.
Yeah, I'll spend 2 silver and take 4 bolts.
Now, Paul, I don't know how you like to handle it, or I think I do, but when spending the money that your character begins with, mm-hmm. it doesn't necessarily all need to happen in a role-playing atmosphere. It can be things – you can spend this money to apply the equipment that your character already owns.
Yeah.
And I like to say that anything that is common under the rarity column of equipment, you can just – own by spending the appropriate amount of silver or gold based on the cost on the chart. If it's anything beyond common, I ask for GM's approval.
Yeah, it's common or plentiful too, right?
Because anything common or more.
Right, because what are the breakdown for it? So it's plentiful. Abundant, plentiful, common, rare, and exotic are the rarities.
Yeah,
so anything abundant, plentiful, or common, you should be able to just buy right out.
At the appropriate cost, yeah.
Yeah, and then rare and exotic. With those with rare and exotic for weapons, that's already taken into account with the cost. But I'd kind of agree with you that that's not necessarily somebody, especially if you're starting out poor. If you were starting out affluent or something like that, then yeah, probably I'll let you get a rare exotic.
There's also one item. Other element we can add to this. On the back of your career card, the very last section is called typical trappings. Anything on there, I think, can be readily purchased if you have the money.
Yeah.
So like a messenger would typically have a hand weapon, leather armor, a riding horse, maps and mumbo jumbo.
But again, that's a... But again, that's a suggestion, not a requirement. You don't get that stuff for free.
Correct. But these are things that I would, as the GM, even if some of these things were exotic, for example, mm-hmm. I would allow the player, if he had enough money, to purchase it at character creation because there's something that character would typically own. But that would be kind of on the GM's decision.
Right. And a dwarf would never be riding a horse.
Correct. He's riding a goat.
He'd be pulling a cart.
Well, so given that I definitely want to have a shield to go with my character style of earlier, I have a couple options here, but I am going to buy a round shield, which is a typical warrior shield. It's common and costs 25 silver for encumbrance. And I'll add that to my roster here. And it said that can also double as a improvised weapon if I wanted to. No special characteristics.
I usually allow my players, even if you want to use your crossbow or your longbow as an improvised weapon in melee combat, I usually allow them to do that. Because, I mean, if you hit someone over the head hard enough with a crossbow, it's going to hurt.
Yeah, well, you might want to consider as a GM adding some elements for... potentially damaging it, though.
Oh, for sure. Well, isn't there a card in there that's for damaged item? Pretty sure there is in the conditions.
Oh, is there? Oh, that'd be cool. Does anybody else have some purchases they'd like to make?
Yeah, I want to purchase a spear.
Okay, a spear
for
is
20 silver.
And right, magic cool. helmet?
Not yet. The magic helmet. The magic helmet comes when my messenger friend turns into a runesmith. And I become an engineer and make him an exoskeleton.
And I feel bad being a dwarf in just cloth. That just seems wrong. So I'm going to try and find some kind of armor.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to wear leather armor if I can afford it.
I will wear brigandine armor for 20 silver. That sounds a heck of a lot better than cloth.
Actually, still shameful for a dwarf. Defense, eh?
What's that?
It gives you silver.
Yeah, one and one. And it's common encumbrance of 5. So I'm actually up to 12 encumbrance so far.
I'm going to wear leather armor.
What is the encumbrance limit?
I believe it's 5 times your strength.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dwarves will add
plus 5 for dwarves.
Five after that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So my encumbrance limit is 20, and I'm currently using 12.
And mine's 15.
Yeah, mine's 20 as well.
I have 5 silver left over here. I'm going to probably have to save that just for general living expenses. I will buy a general map of the Empire, which would be under, let's see, page 104, the player's guide has kind of your general stuff. That would probably
is it the Schmottweil?
Trade tools, maybe, or transportation. Doesn't even look like they have a cost needed for it necessarily. 4 silver for a good map, or a plentiful map. Seems like a lot.
Well, for your map, for the Schmottweil. Is that what you're purchasing? That's what you're purchasing is the Schmottweil.
How much would you pay?
Well, anybody wants to print it now is going to have to pay at least, God, I don't know, 150. If they want it on one piece of paper.
So what would you say navigational tools would
trade
cost?
Tools.
Yeah, actually, trade tools is any of your class-specific or career-specific equipment. So I will do that as well. I will buy the plentiful version of my trade tools at 4 silver, leaving me with 1 left. So trade tools might include, for a messenger, an illiterate one at that. Oh, here. So I would be carrying a variety of maps. An identifying seal of the noble family or merchant for whom I work for. Seems appropriate, but I do get some maps.
Okay.
How are you looking,
Paul? What do you guys do for encumbrance for the general stuff?
I tend to give anything that is of just average size or trade tools 1 encumbrance, unless it's something that's actually large or strange, like a shovel or
a big toolbox, you know, with a big hammer and a bunch of anvil tools and stuff like that in it.
I would not give any single item more than 3 points of encumbrance, though. 3 is kind of like my rule of thumb for something large and awkward.
Yeah, like a ladder?
Something small. Yeah, a ladder, a shovel, a bow, a bow wouldn't be a...
I wouldn't even give a shovel 3.
You know, a huge coil of rope might be 1 or 2 encumbrance, depending on how much rope they're bringing.
So here's what I'm looking at to kit my guy out. So I start with 50 silver. I definitely want a throwing dagger to use my sudden knife skill, which is the... all of a sudden, a knife grows out of somebody's back, and I'm over there going, do, 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 do. So that's 10 silver for that. Get some leather armor. That's another 5 silver there. I'm definitely going to pick up some thieves' trade tools. So at the common level for that, which is another 10, that brings me down to 25. I'm going to pick up some common climbing tools, which is another 2. So that's down to 23. And then for another 2, I'm going to pick up some common illumination tools, which is basically a storm lantern that I'll get for another 2. So that brings me down to 21. Silver left.
Wow, he made it out. He made it out cheap, didn't he?
Well, I want to also get an astrolabe and a compass.
That would definitely be trade tools. The question is are those common trade tools, or would they be more along the rare side of trade tools?
Well, they could also common and rare could represent the quality of your tools more so than what the tools are themselves. So you could have some rusty and accurate ones.
Yes, can I take common? What are they called when they're one less than average, when they're poor? So can I take
plentiful?
Well, can I take them as like list them as poor items so that when I use them, I have to take a black dice as well?
Yeah. So the rule around poor items is that's kind of the GM's rule, isn't there?
That is the way to do it. You can take poor quality items, adds one misfortune die anytime you use them, or exceptional quality, which gives you one white die. There's a cost increase or decrease based on that as well. So I think it kind of that's where your GM just kind of comes in and makes a quick ruling on it and moves on.
I need some sort of basic navigational tools.
Right, and I think that's covered. I think that's covered by the common trade tools. But you got to think about it, Lester. You're poor. Right. So this is where me as a GM would come back and say, if you want the fancy stuff, you shouldn't be poor. So even though that's your career, right? So if you want the cool gear, either as a fighter type person or an engineer type person or things like that, this stuff isn't cheap. And that's one of the reasons why your wealth shouldn't be your dump stat. Right, so it should all balance out. So I think common trade tools for the navigator should include, you know, the basic compasses and maybe even astrolabe and maps and things like that. But I think anything fancy, you're going beyond that into the rarity of stuff, and that stuff costs multiple gold.
Okay, so for I can have basic navigational tools for 10 silver.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely.
I'm entering some of my personal information here on the expanded character sheet, like height, build, hair color, eye color. I will hail from Karak Asgaraz.
So what do we have left? So we've got everybody set up and geared out?
We do. I think we are at... we're kind of at this kind of the fine point, like more role-playing elements now, that the characters have been flushed out. We have stances, we have our defense, we have our soak values, we've got hit points, we've got wound thresholds and corruption thresholds, we've got characteristics, we've got skills. All right, we probably want to choose a party sheet at some point as well, which may help guide us a little bit along our storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull out some of those. Do we have some thoughts on the direction we want to go there?
I think there's a couple that I'm looking at here. I'm looking at, since it's dwarves, since you guys are kind of messengers, I think diplomatic entourage could be something to look at. I also think intrepid explorers, kind of going into the messenger and navigator, going into strange and wondrous places.
That one's sounding fun.
I think Brash Young Fools is just too easy of a default one to put out there for a starting party, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it seems like a bit of a...
Well, maybe I'm not leaning towards Intrepid Explorers. What do you guys think?
Yeah, me too, definitely.
We've also got Oathbound, which is always fun for the dwarves.
And you can change your party sheet at some point as well, can't you, if your kind of overall objective changes?
So the party sheet changing, if you go through the stuff that's been provided so far, it's kind of it's given out as a party advancement for completion of a big adventure or a campaign or stuff like that. So basically, you know, I've seen it like at the end of the Gathering Storm, they say, you know, you have the opportunity to change your party sheet after completing that campaign. So I don't think it's something that you should necessarily allow your party to change on a whim. But I think it's more along the lines of if they're acting in a certain way or if they've, you know, kind of as a big benefit to the team as a whole, if they want to change it.
Well, I think it sounds like we're all kind of leaning towards Intrepid Explorers, maybe while we're out on the road doing the messaging and the navigating and all that, we've kind of taken the opportunity to maybe take a little sidetrack here and there and explore the world outside of our hold.
That sounds great. The Reputation and Focus are the two slots for that. Cool. The special ability is Hale and Hardy. Members of those party may spend fortune points from their personal supply to perform maneuvers during encounter mode.
Let's maybe then transition into how our individual stories or backgrounds now might have evolved over this process.
So are you looking for general kind of narrative, Jesse, or are you looking at the 10 questions?
Oh, I wasn't going to approach it from a 10-question perspective, but I suppose we could do that. What page is that on? Do you recall?
41 in the player's guide.
Thanks.
And I'm not too sure, I mean, how much time we want to spend on this. This is something that I'm kind of – I mean, I've got an idea in my mind of a thief, but I'm kind of trying to think for uniqueness or something special. Not too sure I'll be able to come up with it off the spur.
Well, I've got something kind of boiling in my head as we've been going through this process to give the three of us reasons for being together and even also provide some tension amongst us as well. So I'll kind of throw it out there as something to consider. So Lester and myself are dwarves from Karak Asgraz. We have been partners in our delivery business for quite some time. You know, we work for one of the guilds. We can choose one. And at some point throughout our recent adventures, you being the thief had actually attempted to steal our message from us, being hired by a guild of X location. And you know, we thwarted your thieving attempt. But at the same time, you know, perhaps maybe we were attacked or put all of us in danger, and we all ended up kind of saving each other's lives and surviving together. And through that initial conflict, we kind of became friends.
Yeah, that's definitely a good setup.
We could also be searching, like the two dwarfs could be kind of like an out party from Karak Asgraz, building relationships with the surrounding area, because if I recall correctly, reading about the dwarves of Karak Asgraz, they're relatively young. They're all short beards, and they're out for adventure. And yes, it's relatively a new place, so we're still kind of establishing a foothold in the area. And we could be sent as messengers of, you know, whoever the lordlings are, to kind of build relationships in whatever trade and combat with the surrounding towns and the surrounding
PR
lords. Basically, we could be PR.
I think it's really easy for you and I, Lester, to see where we fit into the group, and I'm trying to look for a creative way to include the human thief with these two obvious pals.
We also don't have to know that his career is a thief. We could have met him, like his character can be something other than a thief. He's just a thief to make money.
And the other That's a very good point. With that, I was going to flip back on the dwarves as well. Just because, and this goes for all characters, just because your career is something doesn't mean that your current career, or your career isn't necessarily your job, right? Your career is what, where you've come up to this point. Your job at this point is hopefully adventure, right? Because if you're, because if you're beholden to your previous career, if your career is your job, then that can be fun because you can have certain role-playing aspects that are built into it. But does it give you the flexibility to be an adventurer?
Well, you've always had the option to make the choice, like, though, right? We could stop delivering our message because, you know, gold glittered on the horizon. Who knows?
Yeah, right. But that's what I'm saying is that, you know, you don't have to, just as I don't have to be a thief, I could be an ex-thief. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys don't have to be, you know, on the job for Karak Asgaraz delivering messages or scouting out new locations for them. That could have been what you did up to the point where you decided to chuck it all and become adventurers. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to become the intrepid explorers.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, well, my character's name is Ivaldi Killison, the Pathfinder. And he's a pretty dour individual. Likes to drink, quaff a lot of ale.
and you know, sometimes you got to leave it up to the GM as well, you know, how to get the party together, too. You know, you can start with the usual, you know, you all meet in a bar. You have a common patron for your first adventure. You know, there's many ways to get a party together, and that might be a good introductory role-playing piece on how to learn more about each other, you know, and provide the backstory as opposed to building it off the bat. I really think, you know, with us as all kind of talking party members, I think that would be something that we would discuss with the GM and what the GM would be comfortable with doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we've covered most of what we need to with character creation.
Yeah, everybody just make sure and grab your tokens, your stand, your stance meter.
Stance pieces.
Yeah, stance pieces and all that jazz.
Cool.
Yeah, I've noted all my stuff down here, and I'll put my character together so when we're ready to play.
I'll come up later.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, thanks. I think this was good. Hopefully, educational for the folks and the listeners out there. If you guys have any questions about what we did, or any comments or feedback on what happened, please hit us up. You know, there's plenty of ways to get a hold of us. We're on Twitter at Reckless Dice. We've got a Facebook page. Just search for Reckless Dice. You can send us an email, recklessdice@gmail.com, or leave comments on the site. So thanks a lot for listening, and thanks again, Lester and Jesse, for participating.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks.